This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Christopher Goines works with young men and boys in Chicago. He is chief equity officer at Thrive Chicago, and he's a community lead for My Brother's Keeper. And he hopes to build a strong foundation for those young men and boys so that they will continue with their education. And he joins us now. Christopher Goines, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Meghna. It's great to be here.
So let me ask you first, from your vantage point, what do you think are the biggest challenges that the young men and boys that you work with, that the challenges that they face?
That's an excellent question, and the question that we grapple with every single day in the work that we do in partnership with the Obama Foundation and at Thrive Chicago. The biggest issue that we are seeing that boys and young men of color are facing is a system that is not necessary, that was not designed for them to be successful. And when we're talking about a system, we're talking about when you see the life outcomes of boys and young men of color and men of color in general in Chicago, where we see the differences is that in communities where it is wrapped in poverty and violence and low economic attainment. We have a community here in Chicago called Inglewood, and the life expectancy for a man of color in the community of Inglewood is about 60 years old. When you move up north in our communities up north where predominantly are white people, the life expectancy for a man increases to 80 years old. And these communities, they have distinct differences. Chicago is the most segregated city in the country. And in those communities like Inglewood, you have some of the most challenging schools. Parents do not have a lot of options for their schools. They're food deserts. There are places where young people do not have any opportunity or even access to getting downtown to Michigan Avenue, which is the heart of Chicago and the heart of our economy here in Chicago. And so to answer that question, it is a deep systemic issue with men of color and boys and young men of color in Chicago. That's the biggest issue that we are facing.
And do you think, or has it become more challenging for young men and boys now that you work with than it was, say, 20 or 30 years ago? I'll ask you that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do believe it has gotten more challenging because young people change. They are they're different. They have access to more. They have access to more things because of technology and because of the internet, and they're exposed to a lot more than students were in the past. And my theory of change is that we have to approach solutions a little bit differently than what worked 30 years ago. Students are different. Young people are different. The challenges are different. All the things that they are facing each and every day in their lives are totally different. And when I put the pinpoint on Chicago, young people in Chicago have faced insurmountable challenges. We have had a massive school closures that totally disrupted their lives. And these are young men that are juniors and seniors in high school right now that were grossly impacted by school closures. And then if we think about the impact of what the pandemic is having, we are still in a pandemic. And that is grossly impacting communities of color and communities that are wrapped in poverty and violence. And so if we're not thinking differently around our solutions, we're going to continue to see dismal results for men of color and men in general.
Well, so, Mr. Goines, I'm so glad you're able to join us today, because as you know, broadly this hour, what we want to take a look at is the sort of growing pattern of evidence about the prospects of young men and boys in this country. I mean, at the highest echelons of society, as you well know, men still dominate. They're doing all right in that top 10% when it comes to income and educational attainment. But that's just a tiny slice of men in America, and it seems
absolutely
to, right. It seems to be that there's a mountain of evidence now that says in the past 30 to 50 years, other men have had experienced this like long downward trajectory in skills, employment rates, incomes, educational attainments. And we're going to get an understanding about why that's happening and why it's important to do something about it. And the first question that always pops to my mind is like, you know, who are we talking about specifically?
Yeah.
So for men of color, have you mm-hmm. seen evidence of that sort of generational downward trajectory in all those factors, skills, employment, educational attainment? And is it even, in fact, worse than for, let's say, white men?
I can't necessarily speak for white men. I squarely live in the space for boys and young men of color, but I do know, and when I say boys and young men of color, I'm talking about Black, Native American, and Latinx. And what I do know about boys and young men of color, and how I do know that this New York Times opinion article that was written is kind of sparking these conversations, and it presented a lot of research around men of color and men in general. And what is disheartening with how that is presented is that it does not take into consideration and does not mention the absence of, the article is the absence of, like, how the system has not necessarily created a situation for boys and young men of color and men in general to succeed. And I think we have to look at, where are the areas where we see men exceeding? Where are the areas where we see men of color just getting transformational gains? And we see that in places where there's targeted solutions mm-hmm. for specific for men. And examples of that is Morehouse College. That is the graduation rates of students that attend Morehouse College in Atlanta, hover around 80%. We also see areas where we are not creating solutions, where research is telling us that if you want to see transformational gains for boys and young men of color, put the right teacher in front of them and put a teacher in front of them that looks like them. And here's a little data point that I want to share, Magna, is that if a Black student has one teacher in elementary school that looks like them, their likelihood of going to college increases by 13%, well, their likelihood of not dropping out increases by 13%, and their likelihood of going to college increases by 39% if they have one teacher in elementary school that looks like them. So to me, that says we need to have a targeted solution to get more men of color in front of our kids if we want to talk about the life attainment for boys and young men of color. And we have to think about that if one student, just one student drops out of high school, it costs society nearly $300,000. Mm. And then we have to also think about what research is saying to us around why it's important for young men and all people to have a mentor. If you have a mentor in life and in high school and in college, and also in elementary school, you're 55% more likely to go to college, and you're 78% more likely to volunteer, and 130% more likely to hold a leadership position in your professional community or on a college campus. So I think that the solutions are right there. The data proves to us why we should focus on education, why we should focus on embedding mentorship in everything that we do, and then we'll start seeing transformational outcomes for men of color,
okay,
and men in general.
So Christopher Goins, hang on here for just a second.
Sure.
Because I want to bring David Otter into the conversation. He is okay. A professor of economics and co-director of MIT's Task Force on the Work of the Future. He's been studying the American labor economy for years and has done some of the most pivotal research on the prospect of for men and boys in this country. So Professor Otter, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Megan, and thank you, Christopher. Really nice to meet you.
So we're going to...
Nice to meet you, too.
I want to actually just take a step back for a moment here and ask you, Professor, what the aggregate data is telling us about what men have experienced in this country over the past 30 years, because one of the things that really triggered this conversation was a recent... spate of reporting that found that, for example, when it comes to college enrollment, it's pretty much... flipped between the gender balance is pretty much flipped. About 50 years ago, 60% of college students were men, 40% women. Now that's completely the opposite. We're seeing 60% women, 40% men. That's just one piece of information that we'll dig into a little bit more. But can you tell us, like, where else would you look to see if we can make any conclusions about how men have been faring over, say, the past 30 years?
Sure. So actually, let me start with that statistic. An important reason why the share of women in college has risen so much relative to men is not that men have fallen, it's that women have surpassed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, women were substantially you know, up. So, for example, in 1980, you know, if you looked at people, young adults, 25 to 34, women were about 8 percentage points less likely to have a college degree. By 30, women were about 8 percentage points more likely to have a college degree. But that was largely because men's college going plateaued after the end of the Vietnam War, and women's college going had been on an upward trend, and that continued. So not all of the relative decline of men reflects an absolute decline of men. Some of it just actually reflects women attaining more education. And I should say, this is not unique to the United States. In almost every industrialized country, women, you know, get about 30% or about 30% more likely to get a college degree than our men. So this is not unique to us. And in many ways, the lower rate of college attainment of women reflects a distortion. Historically, women always did better than boys. Girls always did better than boys through primary and secondary school. And then boys went on to college and women did not. So, but there are, it's important to understand it's not all just men declining. Women are rising, and that's good news.
Okay. Well, can I just hit pause there for a second? Because we're headed towards a break, and I have to let Christopher Goines go in a minute here. But Mr. Goines, I'm going to give you the last 30 seconds here before we have to take that break. You talked about mentorship. What are one or two other solutions that you would aim for to help particularly the young men and boys that you work with?
Absolutely. Thank you for that question. And I would just focus on the work that I'm doing right now. We have created a targeted strategy here for Chicago, and we've deployed an effort in 5 different high schools where we designed a course curriculum targeted for boys and young men of color. They will take this course. It's called Intro to Urban Education, because we see that when you have the right teacher in front of you and a teacher that reflects the cultural and lived experience of the students that they're serving, you see different names. Mm-hmm. And so we are trying to recruit and retain more men of color in the classroom because we know the impact that they have.
Christopher Goines, hang on for a second. I will let you finish that thought because I hate to interrupt you, but we'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about the prospects for men in this country, because on some very key measures or metrics, income, employment, educational attainment, men have been on a downward trajectory in this country. We're going to talk about what that means, what the data show, disputes over it, etc. But I'm joined today by Christopher Goines. He's Chief Equity Officer at Thrive Chicago. David Otter is also with us. He's a professor of economics at MIT. And Mr. Goines, I'm so sorry I had to interrupt you to take that break there, but I wanted to let you finish your thought about things that we can do specifically to help young men and boys that you work with, you know, defeat that downward trajectory that we're seeing in this country.
Absolutely. And what I was saying before the break is that we are imploring and trying to address the national crisis that only 2% of the teaching force are men of color. And so, but research also supports the transformational power that a male educator of color has on lives of students of color. And we are doing that through a targeted solution where we are viewing our students here in Chicago, our male students of color, as the assets that we need to see the change that we want to see for our community. 1 in 10 students in Chicago that are boys and that are young men of color have indicated that they would love to go into a field of teaching, but we did not have a direct pipeline to support that. And What we are doing, we've written a curriculum. We've deployed that into five high schools as a pilot. It's for high school male seniors, and it is all geared towards teaching them what it means to be an educational activist, what it means to be a teacher. So with the hopes that they would actually go to college, understanding and knowing where their purpose lies, and then understanding and knowing the transformational impact that they have as educators, and then hopefully that we will see colleges that will pretty much throw money at them. And this is how we can think differently around boys and young men of color. We give them scholarships for athleticism, for football, for baseball, for basketball, but we do not provide targeted scholarships for men of color to go into fields where we need them the most. And education is one of them. And we have some distinct partnerships with several colleges in Chicago who are making commitments to provide targeted scholarships and targeted supports for these young men to come to their campuses. And that's how we're pushing for change here. And we're also like doing a lot of work to really elevate and support existing male educators of color, because we don't need them to leave. Because of the statistics that you have quoted earlier, men of color and the education system and the right people in front of them can actually impact transformational change that will impact all numbers across society.
Well, Christopher Goines, Chief Equity Officer at Thrive Chicago and also community lead for My Brother's Keeper in the city of Chicago, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, David Auder, let me turn back to you. The reason why we wanted to start with the work that Christopher Goines is doing is because, you know, when we talk about men in America, that's an incredibly diverse group of people. And I suppose folks kind of come to the table with some assumptions about who we're talking about here. So what I wanted to ask you is, again, when we're talking about the various data points that show a downward slide, is that universal amongst men of all races in this country over time?
Yeah, good question. So first, let me say I really admire the work that Christopher Goines is doing, and I may talk about some of the underlying causes, and my diagnosis may be somewhat different from him. Is, but I think that we actually are fairly aligned on the solutions. So, so I just want to put that out there. It is the case that labor force participation rates, which I think is kind of a key indicator, have slipped a considerable amount for men, much more for African-American men, and much more so for less educated men. And men are less educated than women, and unfortunately, minority men are less educated than non-minority men in the United States, unless we're talking about Asian American men who are actually more educated than Caucasian men. So that's highly highly problematic, and of course, incarceration rates are epidemically high. There's a unique distortion of the United States among high school non-completers, but dramatically higher still among African-American men. And high school graduation rates are considerably lower among men than women, and much more so among African-American men than African-American women or Caucasian men or women. And recently, we've also actually seen a decline in college-going rates among young men, which is something new. As I mentioned a moment ago, it's not that they had fallen historically among men, at least not in the last 40 years. It's that they had risen very slowly. Now they actually appear to be on the decline, which is quite surprising.
Mm. Well, so the sort of big framework that we have set for this hour has actually come from your research, of course, triggered by those new college-going rate numbers that we talked about. But for years, you've been putting out research, and I'll just quote you here, that says, over three decades, the labor market trajectory of males in the U.S. has turned downward along multiple dimensions: skills acquisition, employment rates, occupational stature, and real wage levels. Essentially, the median male, as you call him, is moving in this downward direction. So tell me more about that. What data have you seen that shows that maybe the things are challenging for American men?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest change is in the labor market and in the types of jobs that are available to people without college degrees. The labor market has dramatically shifted away from blue-collar production and opportunity positions, unionized blue-collar positions, and increasingly away from good office positions, clerical administrators positions as well. In response to that, women have, or not exclusively in response to that, but women have kind of upped their game enormously as those changes have taken place. So women now, you know, outnumber men in medical school, in law school. There are more women managers in the U.S. labor market than there are males as managers. And so women have dramatically raised their educational attainment and career attainment. Now, as you said at the beginning of the show, I want to be clear, it's still the case, and not as it should be, that men dominate the upper echelons of many professions, whether that's in, you know, whether that's in medicine, whether that's in law, it's in consulting, even in academia. And that's a distortion. But on average, women have increased their stature enormously. Men have not responded nearly as successfully. Their educational attainments have not risen nearly as rapidly. And as a consequence, more of them are working in basically lower paid personal service jobs, food service, cleaning, security, entertainment, recreation, home health care. Fewer of them are working at all. And where we've seen these big declines, particularly in manufacturing employment, we've seen big falls in employment rates and increases in other forms of, you know, what look like maladaptive behavior, you know, increased crime, drug use, even what Angus Deaton and Case refer to as deaths of despair, meaning deaths due to overdose and alcohol, and declines in marriage rate and increases in child poverty. And unfortunately, this is very much a kind of an intergenerational problem. Adults who have not had great success in the labor market, many of them have children, natural thing to do. And their kids are disadvantaged by that. They have access to fewer resources, less good schools, less safe neighborhoods, less good health care, and less parental time and attention. And so those kids fare less well. And the evidence that my co-authors and I have put together, we're not alone in this, suggests that that's particularly disadvantages boys.
Right.
So under the same circumstances, boys seem to do to attain less and get into more trouble when they're born into single parent headed households, when they're born into poverty, when they're born when they live in dangerous neighborhoods. So, you know, as Christopher's you know focus was on young men, but of course, you know, young women are exposed to the same circumstances. Right. But they're not, they've not had the same, response.
Yeah.
Right. Young women have, and young, this would be true for young African-American women, as well. I mean, quite strongly, they have relatively high employment rates, higher high school graduation rates, higher college attainment rates. So the problem is much, much more pronounced among men, but especially among men from, disadvantaged households or low SES households.
Well, can I just step in here for a second? Because there's so much to actually be understood in the data here. But I want to widen the lens for a moment, Professor Otter, if we can do that, because so much of this flows through what we're seeing in terms of changes in education. I'm still thinking about those college enrollment numbers here. So just listen along with me for a second here, because this is Jim Shelley, who works at Lakeland Community College in Kirtland, Ohio. And a quarter century ago, he started a center at the college dedicated to helping men succeed in school and life. And he reached out to other colleges and universities to see if there were models on which to base his new center. But Jim Shelley found that few colleges had men's support centers.
What I did hear from the college personnel that I spoke with was that men are the problem, i.e. men are behaving badly and need to be reprogrammed seemed to be the attitude that most colleges and universities had towards men. And we did not want to base our premise on that and instead took the premise men have problems too, and that's sort of been our modus operandi since 1996.
Even today, Shelley says that a men's center is pretty uncommon, and he gets a lot of pushback from people who ask why, if men have long held power and privilege in this country, why do they need support?
One reason to help men, particularly young men, we know historically that when young men are dissatisfied disgruntled, conflicted. They will often act out, sometimes collectively, and that can be detrimental and indeed destructive to society. And of course, women and children benefit as well from men who are educated, secure, mature, untroubled.
At one point, the Lakeland Community College moved to fold the Men's Resource Center into a larger office space. A larger office of equity and inclusion. But Jim pushed back, saying men wouldn't seek help from such a broadly focused center. And he said men need to have their own center.
I have a lot of men who stop by the Men's Center, and they've seen the sign outside the door, and they stop in and they're very glad that there is such a resource and usually very surprised that there is. And it's kind of sad to see sometimes, you know, because they're not expecting it. And they're kind of accustomed to being overlooked or in any event, not having anything special done for them.
That's Jim Shelley, who runs the Men's Resource Center at Lakeland Community College in Kirtland, Ohio. David Auder, can you tell me why you think it matters to pay attention? Why does it matter for the country to pay attention to the data that we've been talking about the prospect of not elite men in this country?
Sure. I think that's an easy question. It matters. First of all, it matters because we care about the welfare of all individuals. Second, it matters because it doesn't, even if you said, well, that's their choice, you know, in rather hard-heartedly, it affects the people they would partner with, their potential spouses. It affects their children. It affects the level of crime and incarceration. It affects the tax base. It affects our ability to grow and innovate in all kinds of ways. People, we're all kind of in this together. And low rates of success, comparatively low rates of success of a big chunk of the population affects all of us. And I think we should also be additionally concerned because this problem has gotten more pronounced over time. And it's ironic because, you know, in many ways, you know, people are, you know, men are more educated than they were 40 years ago. There are many ways in which we're more affluent. I would say that we're a racist country in many ways, or have systemic racism, but probably less so than we did four decades ago. And yet, certainly the employment prospects of less educated men, but particularly less educated African-American men, have just gone south. And that's just problematic on so many levels. So we have a great deal to be concerned about. And even if you took, you know, the kind of laissez-faire, well, their choice, whatever, you should be concerned about their potential spouses, their partners, and the children they will have, who will be disadvantaged by the choices of their parents. And in the United States, we are not a very economically mobile society. People don't go from rags to riches at a high rate in the U.S. relative to many other advanced countries, including, you know, Canada, our neighbor to the north. And so when your children are born into unfavorable circumstances, it's very likely they will grow into adults.
Right.
With unfavorable circumstances as well.
I just want to ask a question for the sake of clarity, to be sure that I'm understanding this correctly. We're not saying that for example, women have been doing much better and men have been doing better. It's just that women have been doing twice as good, for an example. We're saying that women have made gains and men have not at the same time. Is that what we're saying?
Women have made gains and men have made losses. So in college education, women made gains and men had kind of stagnated up until very recently. In the labor market, women have made gains and men have gone downward in absolute terms.
Okay.
Seen in employment to population rates, seen in the earnings of people without college degrees.
So
they really have moved in the wrong direction.
So I will posit that the economy does not have to be a zero-sum game.
Absolutely.
Just going to put that out there. So it's not just a recutting of the pie here. That's
an
issue. But we've got about a minute before the break. Can a nation become more socially vulnerable, more politically unstable when we see this downward trajectory of men?
Of course. I mean, if you look at the violence that we see, for example, the violence is, you know, primarily conducted, you know, carried out by and perpetrated upon less educated members of our society living in poor neighborhoods and poor households. And certainly, you know, if those individuals had, you know, been born into better circumstances, they would not be making the same set of choices. And we want to remedy that. And through many of the ways that Krister was talking about, I don't think we can instantly change the labor market. We can't instantly change household structure, but we can improve the way we educate, the set of services that are available. And there are a lot of really well evidenced, you know, programs that are effective. We should talk about some of those after the break, I suppose.
Well, Professor David Autor is joining us today. He's a professor of economics and co-director of MIT's Task Force on the Work of the Future. And we're talking about the prospect of men in this country. We'll have more when we come back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Just a preview about what we're doing tomorrow on the show. We're talking about academic freedom on college campuses and the debate over academic freedom. And so if you teach on a college campus anywhere in this country, I want to know if you have shifted your teaching, changed your syllabus, or maybe even faced discipline because of something you said or wrote. What's the state of academic freedom on your campus? Want to hear from you. And also, students, have you ever called for the punishment or censure or even firing of a professor for their writing, their comments, etc.? We want to hear stories about this at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. Also want to hear from people who say this is a tempest in a teapot, if that's you. That's 617-353-0683. But today we are taking a close look at how men are faring in this country. Again, not elite men, but the large swath of all other American men who have been facing a downward trajectory in employment, in wages, and now most recently in educational attainment, and what that means for our democracy as a whole. I'm joined today by David Autor. He's a professor of economics at MIT, has been studying this for many, many years along with his colleagues. And Professor Autor, when we asked listeners for their thoughts about how men are doing, interestingly, the biggest response we got were from people who know boys, young boys in their lives. And here's what they said.
I believe boys have really been kind of dumbed down. It's all about girls. It's all about women empowerment, which I'm obviously totally for because I have a daughter.
We have begun to promote and accept women in a variety of roles. Women can do anything, you know, that kind of mantra. And while that is 100% accurate, the other side of that coin has been that men can still only be certain things.
There's so much attention on girls when I shop for them. The things for girls, there's 10 times as many things for girls. There's no emphasis on helping boys to adapt, to adjust.
And there seems to be this real push that you can be a boy or you can be a man.
But I also have a book that I got my daughter about, go, you know, you can do anything you want to do. You have freckles. You can raise your hand. You can be loud. It's so great. And so I thought, wow, this is great. Check it out for my son. Well, the exact same book written by the exact same author talks about basically don't touch girls and no means no.
Well, that's On Point listener Kate from Columbus, Ohio, Obo in Lunenburg, Massachusetts, and Alice in Glendale, California. Professor Otter, so we're going to keep talking in just a minute about the economic forces behind this change, but the social ones have to also be addressed too. So I'd like to invite Ronald Levent into the conversation. He's emeritus professor of psychology at the University of Akron and author of The Psychology of Men and Masculinities and also The Tough Standard, The Hard Truths About Masculinity and Violence. Professor Levent, welcome to you.
Thank you, Magna. It's good to be on your show.
Respond a little bit to what you just heard those parents and grandparents say about the world they see their young boys growing up in.
Thank you. Yes, I will. You know, while I do applaud these changes that have taken place in girls and women's roles and the supports that are available to them, I also agree that attention needs to be paid to boys, but it has to be done with some understanding of the kinds of challenges that boys typically face. Most boys, very early in age, at preschool or elementary school, are made to feel that they must be masculine. They must be a real boy. And that usually means they must be tough. They must not show any weakness. They should avoid anything that looks feminine. And by the way, being a good student looks feminine to a lot of boys, and that's part of the problem here. So I think we really need the kinds of conversations that we've had over the past decades among women and girls that have allowed them to excel in the ways that you've outlined for boys. And we also have to talk with their parents. Do we still want to raise boys to be unemotional? Do we want to make boys ashamed of themselves if they should happen to feel sad enough to cry? So that's how I'd open this conversation.
Okay. And so then, Professor Otter, how does what your research then, is there an area of overlap there between that and what you just heard Professor Levent saying about changing messages to young boys?
Yeah, I'm going to sound a little skeptical here.
Okay.
Nice to meet you, Professor Levent, and not towards your work, but I don't believe these forces are what has changed to disadvantage boys. I don't think, you know, emphasis on masculinity has gotten more extreme. If anything, has gotten less extreme. I don't think these additional educational supports given to women or to young girls have you know, been a huge force harming men. I think if you ask me what has changed, I would say the two most important factors, but also two very hard things to change are, one, the structure of job opportunities that have been created much more, or the set of jobs are opening are much more conducive to the traditional strengths and preferences of women. Much of the work is interpersonal, is management, is communication, less emphasis on jobs about physical strength, and I don't want to imply that women can't do those jobs or men can't do the other types of jobs, but in terms of what people have traditionally wanted to do, the labor market has shifted in a way that's very favorable towards skilled, analytical, sociable, interactive workers, and has shifted against people who do physically demanding, hands-on work.
Okay, let me just jump in here, though.
Jobs.
Let me just jump in
and
here.
And can I add a second point?
Yeah, sure. And then I also have a gentle pushback, but go ahead.
Okay, great. Yeah. And the other thing that's changed, so one is the labor market, the other is household structure has changed enormously. So at present now, 40% of all U.S. kids are born in non-married households. Among African Americans, that's 70%. Among Caucasians, that's 28%. Among Asians, that's 12%. And boys do worse in those households than do their sisters. And so I think the change in household structure itself has been disadvantageous for boys.
Okay. So this is, it's not going to be any one thing.
Nope.
That's why we're inviting experts from a variety of disciplines here. But I am curious about those college enrollment numbers and the drop in men in those college enrollment numbers. You were talking about the labor market to begin with, but What explains the fact that I think I saw that of all the people not enrolling in college now, 70% of them are men? What would explain that?
Well, most of
I could take a
Oh, I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Professor Levant.
Yeah, I can take a stab at that. I mean, one of the things that needs to be brought into discussion is that boys have more challenges in K through 12 education, more learning disabilities, more behavioral problems, and the like. And when you add that to, and I would push back against Dr. Otter, the overwhelming still pressure to be masculine, which is really to not excel in school, then you set up a course where boys are going to fall further and further behind, graduate high school at lower rates, enter college at lower rates. I think what we need to do really is kind of understand that you can be a boy or a man without being masculine. The public is confused about this issue. Many people think that masculinity is synonymous with being a man. But in psychology, we have many scales that measure masculinity, and like most psychological variables, they vary quite a good deal, from highly masculine or macho to really very unmasculine. So, and we also have about 40 years of research linking people who endorse and conform to these masculinity norms with harmful outcomes.
Mm. Professor Otter, go ahead.
Sure. So I'm sure what Dr. Levant said is correct. At a point in time, I don't think it's changed in the direction that has been, made this more of a problem over time. I mean, I think there's more gender roles, more gender fluidity, more options for boys and girls than there has been in the past. So again, but let me make a hopefully a more constructive point as opposed to an argumentative point, which is what the what are the causes and what are the solutions can really be distinguished, right? The fact that you have bad eyesight is genetic disorder, but we don't fix your eyesight problem by fixing your genes. We get you glasses. I think a lot of the problems that have, caused challenges for boys have to do with changes in labor market and changes in household structure. But those things are very, very hard to change. So we need to ask what is effective. And I think both what Dr. Levant and what Christopher Goines of Thrive were speaking of earlier are both very effective. They involve mentoring, structures. We have randomized evaluations of programs like Year Up in Boston or Project Quest in San Antonio or Goodwill or Jewish Vocational Services or summer internships programs, which are highly effective at getting young adults and particularly young men, keeping them out of some trouble, reducing rates of engagement with the criminal justice system, and enabling them to move into better jobs and also succeed in higher education. So I think I'm fully on board with it, with both of the other people who participated in this conversation alongside you, Meghna, that we need to invest in individuals and create the pathways that redress these challenges. Because I don't think the underlying causes are nearly, or the underlying contributors are nearly as easy to redress as the things that can help people succeed where they are right now.
Yeah. Well, so I'd like to do this. I'm going to sort of reset the conversation here because this is, it's my sandbox. I set the rules. Here's why I care about having this conversation. One is just like my personal belief is that we cannot push towards a more equal society and say it's okay for half of that equal society to experience a decades-long downward trend. It just does not work. That is not equality. And second of all, and perhaps at this moment in our history, even more important, I am consistently, every single day, looking to understand the causes of our democratic fragility. And it, there are many of them, and we've talked to them about them for more than a year, and we'll keep talking about them. And I fundamentally believe that perhaps this is a contributing factor, right, to the political fragility of the country. So those two things in combination for the strength of this nation is why I want to end in the last 4.5 minutes with some solutions from both of your relative spheres of expertise. So Professor Levant, if I can just start with you, give me a 10-year outlook. Like, what could we actually do to meaningfully change the social forces that you've been talking about here?
Well, I think you're very right to look to the threat to our democracy, to the issues we're talking about today. And my lab has done research associating everything from endorsement of extreme right-wing political views to refusal to engage in mitigation measures for the pandemic to masculinity. Masculinity is a harmful problem. So I don't have a magic solution that we can kind of change things overnight, but I think we have to engage in long-term cultural change. We have to talk to parents about raising boys to be who they are. The idea of forcing boys to fit into a set of gender norms, Procrustean bed, if you will, is wrong. We have to understand that boys have personalities that vary a great deal. If you take any single masculine norm, let's say toughness, and measure 100 boys, you'll find scores from very high to very low. So I would say to parents, know who your boy is and let your boy be who he is. Now, some parents have told me, yes, we could do that, but we're afraid of how he'll be received in the real world, to which I would say, have conversations age appropriate with your son, something like this. In our house, we think it's okay for boys to cry, because after all, crying makes you feel less sad, but not everybody agrees. So you have to know who you're with. That is, you have to inoculate your son. And if you're among people who believe that boys should not cry, then you have to not cry, because otherwise they'll get mad at you. But I think we have to encourage parents to allow their boys the totality of what their personalities are, rather than forcing them into these narrow boxes. It's called the man box by some of my colleagues, and allowing them to be the truly open human beings they are, and to not consider such emotions as empathy and compassion and nurturance as wrong for boys.
Mm. Okay, so Professor Otter, let me turn back to you here, because Professor Levant talking about not squeezing boys into a narrowness of their human experience, and then how do we similarly, in terms of economic outcomes later, not squeeze men into an ever narrowing, set of labor opportunities?
Sure. So I think the problem, or the solutions begin very early. Universal pre-K education has been shown to improve people's social and non-cognitive skills that makes them more successful in all walks of life. Charter schools are highly effective, the good ones, for children from low SES backgrounds, do even better with African-Americans and Hispanic kids, boys and girls. Summer mentorship programs help children get role models, boys and girls, but particularly boys, and stay out of trouble. School-to-work programs like the career academies that introduce high school students to the world of work while they're still in high school have been very effective in helping students make school-to-work transitions, those who don't go to college. Reducing over-policing of minorities and men would go some ways towards allowing people to thrive. Promoting labor market opportunities for people with criminal records histories, convincing employers that they are over-screening on these things would help create opportunity for people who have been scarred by our criminal justice system. Ending the over-credentialing of many positions in the labor market that require a college degree, when in fact people would be trainable without one, would also help. So there are many, many practical, concrete investments and changes we can make that can, over the short and medium term and long term, really help with this quite serious problem.
Well, David Otter, professor of economics and the co-director of MIT's Task Force on the Work of the Future. He and his colleagues have been studying the prospect of men for quite some time. It's been a real privilege to have you, Professor Otter. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Megan. And thank you, Dr. Levant. A pleasure to meet you.
And Ronald Levant.
Likewise.
Yeah, emeritus professor of psychology at the University of Akron. Thank you so very much as well.
Thank you, Megan. It was a pleasure to be on.
This is On Point.